Thank you for being an incredible supporter of the 10X Podcast Group, the home of the skillful art of manipulation. We're thrilled to have you as part of our growing community. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Your likes and comments mean the world to us and help us reach a wider audience with our stories. Plus, with new episodes released every day, your feedback plays a vital role in shaping what we create. It truly makes a difference. Your loyalty and enthusiasm fuel our passion for crafting gripping tales, and we're so grateful for your support. Today, we're excited to present The Judas Pact, a story that promises to keep you on the edge of your seat. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1, The Discovery. If you told me last week that a hidden chest could tear us apart, I'd have laughed in your face. We were unbreakable, or so I thought. Best friends since childhood, bound by loyalty, memories, and 1,000 promises. But all it took was one shimmering pile of gold to reveal how fragile we truly were. It started as an innocent getaway. Just the 5 of us, me, Corey, Ella, Marcus, and Rachel. We'd rented a small cabin on the edge of an old forest, surrounded by nothing but endless trees and the whisper of the wind. It was supposed to be a break from the grind, a chance to reconnect, drink too much, laugh until our sides hurt, and talk about everything and nothing around the crackling fire. But by the 3rd day, the novelty wore off. The booze ran low, the conversations became repetitive, and boredom crept in like an unwelcome guest. Corey suggested we explore the woods, to find something cool, as he put it. None of us were particularly outdoorsy, but it was better than sitting around scrolling through our phones. We split into pairs, with me and Ella wandering off toward the east, following the faint trickle of a stream. The forest felt alive, ancient, almost sentient. Each step felt heavier, like the trees themselves were watching us. Ella clung to my arm, laughing nervously as she swatted at the occasional mosquito. "Do you ever feel like something's out there?" she asked, her voice barely above a whisper. "Something? Like what, Bigfoot?" I teased, trying to lighten the mood. She rolled her eyes, but her grip tightened. "No, I mean, I don't know. Something old. Something that shouldn't be disturbed." I laughed it off, but deep down I felt it too, a kind of unease that clung to the air. We walked for what felt like hours before we stumbled upon it, a small moss-covered clearing with a partially buried chest at its center. It looked like something straight out of a movie, a pirate's treasure chest, complete with rusted hinges and ornate carvings. "What the hell?" Ella breathed, her eyes wide. "Is this real?" I crouched down, brushing away the dirt and leaves with my hands. The chest was heavy, the wood worn but intact. My heart raced as I pried it open, the hinges groaning in protest. Inside, glittering in the dim light, was more wealth than I'd ever seen. Gold coins, jewels, and stacks of old faded bills. For a moment, I forgot how to breathe. "Holy shit," Ella whispered, kneeling beside me. Her hands hovered over the treasure, trembling, but she didn't touch it. This can't be real. "Can it?" "It's real," I said, my voice barely audible. "It's fucking real." The others found us moments later, drawn by Ella's excited screams. Corey was the first to reach us, his eyes lighting up like a kid on Christmas morning. Marcus and Rachel weren't far behind, their expressions shifting from confusion to shock to something darker. For a long moment, none of us spoke. We just stared at the chest, at the impossible fortune that had landed in our laps. It was Marcus who broke the silence. "We need to split this," he said firmly, his tone leaving no room for argument. "Evenly. 5 ways." Rachel nodded quickly, her eyes darting between the chest and the rest of us. "Of course. We all found it together. We're in this together." But I noticed the way her hands clenched into fists, the way her gaze lingered on the treasure just a little too long. It was the same with Corey, whose grin was just a little too wide, and Ella, who kept biting her lip like she was holding back something she couldn't say out loud. Even Marcus, the self-appointed voice of reason, had a glint in his eye that I didn't trust. "We should swear on it," Corey said suddenly, his voice loud and commanding. "Right here, right now. No matter what happens, we split this evenly. No bullshit. No trying to take more than your share." He extended his hand, and one by one, we placed ours on top of his. 5 hands, 5 promises, 1 lie. I felt it in my gut even as I spoke the words. "I swear." None of us meant it. Not really. Back at the cabin, the chest sat in the center of the living room like some cursed relic. No one wanted to leave it unattended, so we took shifts keeping watch. At first, it was unspoken, a silent agreement that someone would always be there. But as the hours dragged on, the paranoia set in. I caught Ella whispering to Rachel in the kitchen, their heads bent close together. When they noticed me watching, they quickly broke apart, laughing nervously. Corey spent most of his time pacing, muttering under his breath about safes and offshore accounts. Marcus tried to keep the peace, but his patience was wearing thin. And then there was me, sitting in the corner, watching it all unfold. The cracks were already showing, and it hadn't even been a full day. I didn't trust any of them. Not anymore. But the truth was, I didn't trust myself either. That treasure was a weight in my chest, a whisper in the back of my mind that grew louder with each passing hour. It's yours. Take it. That night, after everyone else had gone to bed, I stayed up, staring at the chest. The fire had burned down to embers, casting flickering shadows across the room. My mind raced with possibilities, with plans. I could take my share and disappear, start a new life somewhere far away. But how? And more importantly, how could I be sure the others wouldn't try the same thing? A creak on the floorboards snapped me out of my thoughts. I turned to see Marcus standing in the doorway, his face half hidden in shadow. "Can't sleep?" he asked, his voice low. "Something like that," I replied, my tone carefully neutral. He stepped closer, his gaze fixed on the chest. "We need to be careful," he said. "This kind of money, it changes people. I've seen it before." I wanted to laugh, to ask him who he thought he was fooling. But I kept my mouth shut and nodded, pretending to agree. "You're right," I said. "We need to stick together." He smiled, but it didn't reach his eyes. "Exactly. We can't let this tear us apart." I watched him leave, his words ringing hollow in my ears. It wasn't the treasure tearing us apart, it was us. And deep down, I knew there was no stopping it. By morning, the first cracks had turned into fractures. Ella accused Rachel of trying to hide some of the coins in her bag. Corey and Marcus nearly came to blows over who should hold the chest's key. I stayed quiet, letting the chaos unfold around me, watching, waiting. The pact we'd made in the woods was already unraveling, and I had a feeling it wouldn't be long before someone made the first move. I just didn't know who it would be. Or maybe I did. Chapter 2, The First Lie. It didn't take long for the pact to break. I suppose I should have expected it. A promise like that, made in the heat of discovery, was as fragile as a spider's web. By the second day, the cracks had spread wide enough for anyone paying attention to notice. Though, of course, no one wanted to admit it. Especially me. I've always thought of myself as a good judge of character. The kind of person who could spot a lie before it left someone's mouth. But maybe that's the kind of arrogance that makes betrayal sting the most. Believing you're smarter than the people around you, only to find out you're just as blind, just as stupid, just as desperate. It started with Ella. I caught her in the living room that morning, crouched by the chest, her hands moving quickly. Too quickly. Her back was to me, but the way her shoulders tensed told me everything I needed to know. She didn't hear me approach, didn't realize I was there until I cleared my throat. "Ella," I said, my voice sharper than I intended. "What the hell are you doing?" She froze, her hand hovering just above the chest. For a moment, I thought she might play it off, but when she turned to face me, there was a flash of something in her eyes, guilt, yes, but also defiance. "I wasn't doing anything," she said, straightening up and brushing her hands on her jeans. "I was just checking to make sure everything's still here." "Right," I said, crossing my arms. "Because we all agreed that's your job, right? Keeping watch over everyone else's share." Her lips pressed into a thin line, and for a second, I thought she might snap. Instead, she plastered on a smile, thin, brittle, and completely unconvincing. "I wasn't taking anything," she said. "Jesus, why are you acting like this?" I wanted to push her, to see just how far she was willing to go to cover her tracks. But before I could say another word, Corey walked in, yawning and rubbing the back of his neck. His eyes flicked between the two of us, and I saw the moment suspicion settled in his expression. "What's going on?" he asked, his tone casual but his gaze sharp. "Nothing," Ella said quickly. "Too quickly. I was just looking at the chest." "Looking at it," Corey repeated, his eyebrows raising. "That's funny, because it kind of looked like you were trying to..." "Jesus Christ, Corey!" Ella snapped, her voice rising. "I wasn't stealing anything, okay? Why don't you calm down?" He didn't respond right away. Instead, he walked over to the chest and crouched down, his fingers brushing over the coins. He wasn't counting them, at least not yet, but the implication was clear. He didn't trust her. "Hell, I didn't trust her either. I think we should count it," he said finally, glancing up at me. "Just to be sure." Ella's face went pale. "Are you serious? You really think I'd..." "It's not about what I think," Corey said, cutting her off. It's about making sure we're all on the same page. You know, so there aren't any misunderstandings. For a moment, I thought she might argue, but then she crossed her arms and stepped back, her jaw tight. Fine, she said. Knock yourself out. Corey didn't need any more encouragement. He started counting the coins, his movements slow and deliberate, like he was savoring the power he had in that moment. I watched Ella out of the corner of my eye, noting the way her hands fidgeted, the way her gaze darted to the chest and back again. She looked like a caged animal, cornered and desperate. When Corey finished, he stood up and brushed his hands together. Looks like everything's here, he said, his tone smug. Guess we don't have anything to worry about. Ella didn't respond. She just turned on her heel and stalked out of the room, slamming the door behind her. Corey laughed, shaking his head. What the hell's her problem? Maybe she doesn't like being accused of something she didn't do, I said, my tone dry. He shrugged. Yeah, or maybe she's pissed because we caught her before she could get away with it. I didn't respond, but his words stayed with me long after he left. Maybe Ella hadn't been trying to steal anything. Or maybe she had. Either way, the damage was done. The seed of doubt had been planted, and it wouldn't take long for it to grow. By midday, the tension was thick enough to cut with a knife. Marcus called a meeting in the living room, insisting we needed to clear the air. It was a good idea in theory, but in practice, it was a disaster. Look, he said, pacing back and forth in front of the chest. We can't let this thing tear us apart. We're friends. We've known each other for years. This money, it's a blessing, but it's also a test. And if we don't trust each other, it's going to destroy us. I wanted to believe him. I really did. But the way the others shifted in their seats, avoiding eye contact, told me everything I needed to know. Trust was already a distant memory. I don't see how we're supposed to trust each other when some of us are already acting shady, Corey said, leaning back in his chair with a smirk. He didn't look at Ella, but the implication was clear. Oh, fuck off, Corey, Ella snapped. You don't know what you're talking about. Don't I? He said, raising an eyebrow. Because from where I'm sitting, it sure as hell looks like. That's enough, Marcus said, his voice sharp. We're not doing this. We're not pointing fingers. If someone has an issue, they need to say it now, so we can deal with it. No one said anything. The silence stretched out, heavy and uncomfortable, until Rachel finally spoke up. I think we should get rid of it, she said quietly. The chest, I mean. It's not worth all of this. Corey snorted. Yeah, sure. Let's just walk back into the woods and bury it again. Great plan, Rachel. I'm serious, she said, her voice trembling. This isn't what I signed up for. I don't want the money. I just want things to go back to the way they were. Things can't go back, I said before I could stop myself. All eyes turned to me, and I felt the weight of their scrutiny. We've already crossed the line. The only way out of this is forward. Forward to what? Rachel asked, her eyes shining with unshed tears. More fighting? More paranoia? Is that really what you want? No one answered her. No one had to. We all knew the truth, even if we didn't want to admit it. The money had changed everything, and there was no going back. Later that night, as I lay in bed staring at the ceiling, I couldn't stop replaying the day's events in my mind. The accusations, the lies, the cracks in the foundation of our friendship. It felt like the beginning of something terrible, like the first tremor before an earthquake. I told myself I wouldn't let it get to me, that I wouldn't let the money change me. But deep down, I knew it already had. We were all playing a game now, whether we wanted to or not. And the rules were simple. Trust no one, and do whatever it takes to survive. I didn't know who would make the first move, but I knew it was only a matter of time. Chapter 3. Secrets Revealed. By the third day, the air in the cabin was suffocating. It wasn't the lack of space or the isolation. It was something heavier, something that clung to us like a second skin. Suspicion. Paranoia. Greed. The chest had become an unspoken god, and we were all its worshippers, circling it, obsessed with its promise of freedom and fortune. I'd been watching everyone closely since the argument yesterday. It wasn't hard to see the changes. Corey had taken to keeping the key to the chest on him at all times, a small piece of metal that now felt like the most powerful weapon in the room. Marcus was trying to play peacemaker, but even he was fraying at the edges, his calm demeanor cracking under the pressure. Rachel avoided the rest of us as much as she could, and Ella. Well, Ella had started whispering in corners, her conspiratorial tones making my stomach churn. But it wasn't just them. I could feel it in myself, too. That creeping, insidious voice that whispered, "Take it. Take it now before they do." I didn't trust anyone anymore. Not even me. It all came to a head that evening. The storm outside matched the tension inside the cabin, rain hammering against the windows as the wind howled through the trees. We were all gathered in the living room, though no one was talking. The chest sat in its usual spot, a silent reminder of the poison it had injected into our veins. I was sitting on the couch, pretending to scroll through my phone, when I heard Ella's voice. She was standing by the kitchen, her back to the rest of us, her phone pressed to her ear. "No, I haven't told them yet," she was saying, her voice low but urgent. "I don't know if I can. It's complicated." I frowned, leaning forward slightly to catch more of the conversation. She must have felt my eyes on her because she turned around suddenly, her gaze locking with mine. For a split second, I saw panic flash across her face, but she quickly masked it with a forced smile. "Who is that?" I asked, keeping my tone casual. "No one," she said, slipping her phone into her pocket. "Just a friend." "A friend," I repeated, not bothering to hide my skepticism. "You sure about that?" "What's that supposed to mean?" she snapped, her voice rising. "It means you're acting shady as hell," Corey interjected, standing up from his chair. "Who are you talking to, Ella?" "I told you it was a friend," she said, her voice defensive. "Why is that such a big deal?" "Because we all agreed we weren't going to involve anyone else," Marcus said, his tone measured but firm. "Whatever happens here stays between us. Or have you forgotten?" "I haven't forgotten," Ella said, crossing her arms. "But maybe I'm not the only one who's been breaking the rules." Her words hung in the air like a challenge. Corey narrowed his eyes, taking a step closer to her. "What the hell is that supposed to mean?" "It means you're not as innocent as you like to pretend," she said, her voice cold. "I saw you, Corey. Last night. Going through Marcus's bag." The room went silent. Marcus's head snapped up, his expression a mix of confusion and anger. "What the fuck is she talking about?" he demanded, turning to Corey. Corey scoffed, but there was a flicker of guilt in his eyes. "She's lying," he said. "She's just trying to deflect because she got caught." "Deflect?" Ella said, letting out a bitter laugh. "You're pathetic, Corey. I know what I saw." "Enough!" Marcus shouted, his voice cutting through the tension like a blade. He turned to Corey, his hands clenched into fists. "Did you go through my bag?" "No," Corey said, his voice firm but unconvincing. "She's making shit up." "Then you won't mind if I check your stuff," Marcus said, his tone dangerous. Corey's jaw tightened. "You're not touching my shit." Marcus didn't wait for permission. He stormed across the room and grabbed Corey's bag, ignoring his protests as he dumped the contents onto the floor. Clothes, a wallet, a pack of cigarettes, and a small velvet pouch that hadn't been there before. "What the fuck is this?" Marcus demanded, holding up the pouch. Corey's face went pale. "It's not what it looks like," he said quickly. "Oh, really?" Marcus said, his voice dripping with sarcasm. He opened the pouch, revealing a handful of gold coins. "Because it looks like you've been helping yourself to the treasure." "I wasn't stealing," Corey shouted, his voice desperate. I was holding on to it. For safekeeping." "Bullshit," Ella said, her voice sharp. "You're a fucking thief, Corey." "Look who's talking," Corey shot back. "You've been sneaking around since the second we found that chest. Don't act like you're any better than me." "Enough," Rachel shouted, standing up from her chair. "All of you, just stop. This is exactly what I was afraid of. The money is tearing us apart." "Maybe it should," I said before I could stop myself. All eyes turned to me, and I felt a twisted satisfaction in their shocked expressions. "Let's be honest, none of us trust each other anymore. So why are we pretending?" Marcus glared at me. "What the hell are you saying?" "I'm saying maybe it's time we stop pretending we're friends," I said, my voice steady. "Because the truth is we're not. Not anymore." The room exploded into chaos. Accusations flew back and forth, voices rising until they were nearly drowned out by the storm outside. I stayed silent, watching the cracks widen with every word. It was almost poetic, in a way. The treasure had done exactly what it was meant to do: expose us for who we really were. By the time the shouting died down, the damage was done. Corey was sulking in the corner, his eyes dark with anger. Ella and Rachel had retreated to the kitchen, whispering furiously to each other. And Marcus. Marcus was staring at the chest like it was a loaded gun. I knew then that the worst was yet to come. The secrets we'd uncovered were just the beginning. The lies, the betrayals, the violence, they were all waiting, just beneath the surface, ready to destroy us. And the worst part? I couldn't wait to see it happen. Chapter 4, The Turning Point. The fourth day began with a silence so oppressive it felt like the cabin itself was holding its breath. The storm had passed overnight, leaving the world outside still and quiet. But inside, the tension had reached a boiling point. No one spoke at breakfast. The clink of forks against plates and the occasional scrape of a chair were the only sounds, and even those felt too loud. I sat at the far end of the table, watching them all through narrowed eyes. Corey was nursing a cup of coffee, his jaw clenched so tight it looked like it might snap. Marcus sat across from him, his eyes darting between the chest in the corner and his own hands, which were balled into fists on the table. Ella and Rachel sat side by side, whispering just loud enough for the rest of us to know they were up to something. And me. I kept my head down, my thoughts racing. I had barely slept the night before, haunted by the memory of the previous evening. The accusations, the shouting, the venomous words that had been thrown around like weapons. It was clear now that our so-called friendship was nothing more than a fragile illusion, one that had shattered the moment we laid eyes on that treasure. But I wasn't ready to give up. Not yet. If the others wanted to tear each other apart, that was fine by me. In fact, it might even work in my favor. After all, the fewer of us there were, the bigger the slice of the pie I'd end up with. It didn't take long for the day to spiral out of control. By mid-morning, Corey and Marcus were at each other's throats again, this time over the key to the chest. Corey had taken to wearing it around his neck, the small piece of metal resting just below his collarbone like a badge of honor, or a target. "You don't get to keep it just because you were the first one to grab it," Marcus snarled, his voice low and dangerous. "We all have a right to that key." "Yeah," Corey shot back, his lips curling into a sneer. "Then maybe you should have been quicker." Marcus lunged at him, his chair scraping loudly against the floor. For a moment, I thought he might actually hit him, but at the last second he stopped himself, his fists trembling at his sides. "This isn't over," he said, his voice trembling with barely restrained fury. "Not by a long shot." Corey smirked, leaning back in his chair. "Whatever you say, man." I spent most of the afternoon watching the others, studying their movements, their expressions, the way they interacted, or didn't interact, with each other. Ella and Rachel spent a lot of time whispering in the kitchen, their heads bent close together. I couldn't hear what they were saying, but I could tell it wasn't good. At one point, Rachel glanced over her shoulder and caught me watching them. Her eyes narrowed, and she leaned closer to Ella, her voice dropping to a near whisper. It was clear they were planning something, but what? And more importantly, who was the target? Corey, meanwhile, had taken to pacing around the cabin, the key bouncing against his chest with every step. He looked like a man on the edge, his movements jerky, and his eyes darting around like he was expecting someone to attack him at any moment. And maybe he was. Marcus stayed in the living room, his eyes fixed on the chest. I couldn't tell if he was trying to keep watch over it, or if he was just lost in thought. But either way, he barely moved for hours. As for me, I stayed in the shadows, listening, watching, waiting. The turning point came just after dinner. We were all sitting in the living room, the chest between us like some grotesque centerpiece. The air was thick with unspoken accusations, and the tension was so palpable it felt like a physical weight pressing down on us. "I think we need to talk," Rachel said suddenly, breaking the silence. Her voice was calm, but there was a sharp edge to it that made the hairs on the back of my neck stand up. "About what?" Corey asked, his tone defensive. "About this," she said, gesturing to the chest. "And about the fact that it's tearing us apart." "Wow, really?" Corey said, rolling his eyes. "Thanks for the insight, Rachel. We hadn't noticed." "Don't be an asshole," Ella snapped, glaring at him. "She's right. We need to figure this out before someone does something they can't take back." The room went quiet at that, the weight of her words settling over us like a heavy blanket. No one wanted to say it, but we all knew she was right. "What are you suggesting?" Marcus asked, his voice cautious. "I don't know," Rachel admitted, her gaze dropping to the floor. Maybe we should get rid of it." "Get rid of it?" Corey repeated, his voice incredulous. "Are you fucking insane? Do you have any idea how much money that is?" "Of course I do," Rachel said, her voice rising. "But what's the point if we're all dead by the time we figure out how to split it?" "No one's going to die," Marcus said, though he didn't sound entirely convinced. "Aren't they?" Ella asked, her voice barely above a whisper. "Because it sure as hell feels like we're heading that way." The silence that followed was deafening. No one wanted to admit it, but the truth was written all over their faces. The treasure had poisoned us, and there was no going back. The first blow came out of nowhere. One second we were arguing, and the next, Marcus was on top of Corey, his fists flying. The rest of us froze, too shocked to move as the two of them rolled across the floor, their grunts and curses filling the room. "Stop!" Rachel screamed, but it was no use. They were too far gone. Corey managed to get the upper hand, pinning Marcus to the ground with one hand while the other went for the key around his neck. "You want it so bad," he snarled. "Then take it." Marcus shoved him off, sending him crashing into the coffee table. The sound of splintering would echo through the room as Corey scrambled to his feet, his face twisted in rage. "That's enough," I shouted, finally finding my voice. I stepped between them, holding up my hands. "Both of you, just stop." For a moment, I thought they might listen. But then Corey lunged at Marcus again, and everything went to hell. When it was over, the living room was a wreck. The coffee table was in pieces, the couch had been overturned, and there was blood on the floor. Corey and Marcus were both breathing heavily, their faces bruised and their clothes torn. But the worst part was the look in their eyes. There was no friendship left there, no loyalty, no trust. Just hatred. That was the moment I knew there was no saving us. The treasure had done its job, and the only thing left was to see how far we would fall. And as I looked around the room, at the blood and the broken furniture and the shattered remnants of our friendship, I realized something else. I didn't care. Let them destroy each other, I thought. Let them tear themselves apart. Because when it was all over, I'd be the one left standing. And the treasure would be mine. Chapter 5, The First Strike. There was a shift in the air after the fight. The kind of shift that you can feel deep in your gut, like the drop before a roller coaster plunges into chaos. It wasn't just the bruises on Corey's face, or the blood smeared across Marcus's knuckles. It was the silence. The kind of silence that comes before a storm, heavy and suffocating. We were no longer friends. We were enemies locked in the same cage, and the chest was the bait that kept us snarling at each other. I stayed up that night, sitting in the corner of the living room with my back against the wall, watching the shadows shift across the ceiling. The chest sat in its usual spot, its surface gleaming faintly in the moonlight. Corey had refused to hand over the key, and now it dangled from his neck like a noose just waiting to tighten. Marcus hadn't spoken a word since the fight. He sat on the couch, his arms crossed and his eyes burning with quiet fury. Ella and Rachel had retreated to the bedroom, their muffled whispers creeping out from behind the closed door. And then there was me, silent, calculating, waiting. I wasn't stupid enough to trust any of them, but I wasn't ready to make my move yet either. Let them destroy each other first. Let them bleed. The fewer of us there were, the easier it would be for me to walk away with the prize. The first strike came in the dead of night. I'd drifted off at some point, lulled into a restless sleep by the sound of the wind outside. When I woke, it was to the sound of a muffled scream. My eyes snapped open, and for a moment I thought I was still dreaming. But then I heard it again, a strangled cry, followed by the sound of something heavy hitting the floor. I scrambled to my feet, my heart pounding in my chest as I scanned the room. The chest was still there, untouched, but Corey's chair was empty. The key was gone. "Corey!" I called, my voice low and cautious. No answer. I moved toward the hallway, my footsteps silent on the wooden floor. The door to the bedroom Ella and Rachel had been sharing was ajar, and I could see a faint light spilling out into the hallway. I pushed the door open slowly, my breath catching in my throat. Rachel was standing in the middle of the room, her face pale and her hands shaking. Ella was on the floor at her feet, her eyes wide and glassy, her neck bent at an unnatural angle. The blood pooled beneath her head was a stark contrast to the white of the bedsheets. "What the fuck happened?" I demanded, my voice sharper than I intended. Rachel turned to me, her eyes wild. "It was him," she whispered, her voice barely audible. "It was Corey. He came in here looking for the key, and she tried to stop him." I looked down at Ella's lifeless body, my stomach twisting. I didn't need to ask what had happened next. The bruise on her neck told me everything I needed to know. "Where is he now?" I asked, forcing myself to stay calm. "I don't know," Rachel said, her voice trembling. "He ran out after. She didn't need to finish the sentence. I could see the guilt written all over her face, but I didn't have time to dwell on it. If Corey had the key, it meant the chest was no longer safe. "Stay here," I said, my voice cold. "Lock the door. Don't let anyone in." Rachel nodded, her hands clutching the edge of the bed like it was the only thing keeping her upright. I turned and left the room, my mind racing. I found Corey in the living room, crouched over the chest with the key in his hand. He was muttering to himself, his movements frantic as he fumbled with the lock. "Corey," I said, my voice cutting through the silence like a knife. He froze, his head snapping up to look at me. His face was pale, his eyes bloodshot. There was a smear of blood on his shirt, Ella's blood. "Stay back," he said, his voice shaking. Don't come any closer. What the fuck are you doing? I demanded, taking a step closer despite his warning. I'm taking what's mine, he said, his voice rising. You think I'm going to let you all gang up on me? You think I don't see what's happening? You're all out to get me. You killed her, I said, my voice low and dangerous. You killed Ella. She tried to stop me, he shouted, his hands shaking as he fumbled with the key. She was going to take it all for herself. Bullshit, I said, my fists clenching at my sides. You're a fucking coward, Corey. You always have been. He snarled, lunging toward me with the key still clutched in his hand. I dodged to the side, grabbing his arm and twisting it behind his back. He screamed, the key falling to the floor with a metallic clink. You think you can take this from me? He spat, struggling against my grip. You're no better than the rest of us. I didn't respond. I didn't need to. Instead, I slammed his head against the edge of the chest, the dull thud echoing through the room. He went limp in my arms, and I let him drop to the floor, his body crumpled like a discarded ragdoll. By the time Rachel and Marcus joined me in the living room, the sun was beginning to rise. Corey's body lay sprawled on the floor, his face bruised and bloodied. The key was back in my possession, dangling from my fingers as I stared at the chest. We need to end this, Marcus said, his voice heavy with exhaustion. Before it gets any worse. End it how? Rachel asked, her voice barely above a whisper. Marcus didn't answer. Instead, he looked at me, his expression unreadable. I met his gaze, my grip tightening on the key. The first strike had been made, but I knew it wouldn't be the last. The chest was still there, still gleaming in the dim light, and it wasn't done with us yet. Not by a long shot. Chapter 6, Descent into Madness. Morning arrived with the weight of death lingering in the air. Ella's body had been moved into the storage shed out back, but the stench of violence and blood still clung to the cabin like an invisible fog. I could feel it in my lungs with every breath, suffocating and thick. No one spoke about her anymore. It was easier that way. Easier to pretend that what had happened was some distant nightmare rather than the cold, brutal reality we now lived in. Corey was dead too. I hadn't slept since the moment his bloodied face hit the floor, the memory of his limp body playing on a loop in my mind. Not because I regretted it, but because I was sure Marcus and Rachel wouldn't let it go. They had been quiet when they saw him lying there, but I could see the fear in their eyes, the way their gazes shifted toward me, and then toward the chest. Fear could make people do dangerous things. I knew that all too well. Rachel spent most of the morning in the kitchen, scrubbing the same spot on the counter over and over again, her hands raw and red from the friction. She wasn't crying, at least not visibly, but her face was pale, her movements robotic. She looked like someone who had given up on pretending things would ever go back to normal. Marcus, on the other hand, was restless. He kept pacing the length of the living room, his jaw clenched and his fists flexing at his sides. Every now and then he'd glance at me, his eyes dark with suspicion. "What's your plan?" he finally asked, breaking the heavy silence. "Plan for what?" I replied, keeping my tone neutral. "For this," he said, gesturing to the chest, to Corey's body still crumpled on the floor, to the overall chaos that had consumed us. "We can't keep doing this." "Doing what?" I asked, leaning back in my chair. "Surviving." His jaw tightened. "Don't play dumb. You know what I mean. This is going to end badly for all of us, unless we figure something out." "And by figure something out, you mean what?" "Get rid of the chest. Split the money and go our separate ways? Pretend we haven't all crossed a line we can't come back from." Rachel let out a bitter laugh from the kitchen. "Splitting the money? That's a good one. Do you honestly think any of us would actually stick to that?" I didn't say anything because I didn't need to. We all knew the truth. No one trusted anyone else anymore. Even the suggestion of sharing the treasure felt like a joke now, a naive fantasy from a lifetime ago. It didn't take long for things to spiral further. By midday, Marcus had taken up a position by the chest, refusing to let it out of his sight. I watched him carefully, noting the way his hand hovered near the knife strapped to his belt. It was a warning, clear as day. "Don't try anything." Rachel, meanwhile, had started whispering to herself. I caught fragments of her mutterings, snatches of words that didn't make sense but sent a chill down my spine nonetheless. She was unraveling, and I had no doubt that it was only a matter of time before she snapped. As for me, I kept my distance. I didn't need to do anything yet. They were destroying themselves, and I was content to let them. But that didn't mean I wasn't planning. Every move they made, every word they spoke, every glance they exchanged, I cataloged it all, storing it away for when the time came to make my move. The breaking point came that evening. The storm clouds had returned, casting the cabin in an eerie gray light. The air was heavy with the promise of rain, but the real storm was brewing inside. Rachel was the first to snap. She stood abruptly, her chair scraping against the floor as she pointed an accusatory finger at Marcus. "I know what you're doing," she said, her voice shaking. "You're waiting for the right moment to kill us, aren't you? You think I don't see it, but I do. You're just like Corey." Marcus shot to his feet, his face twisting with anger. "What the fuck are you talking about?" "Don't play innocent," Rachel spat. "I've seen the way you look at that chest, the way you're always hovering around it like it's yours. You're just waiting for us to let our guard down so you can take it all for yourself." "That's rich coming from you," Marcus said, his voice dripping with sarcasm. "You're the one who's been sneaking around, whispering to yourself like a fucking lunatic. Maybe you're the one we should be worried about." Rachel let out a hysterical laugh, the sound high-pitched and grating. "You think I'm the problem? Look around, Marcus. We're all the problem. But if you think I'm going to let you take what's mine, you've got another thing coming." And then she lunged. The fight was vicious, more brutal than anything I'd seen before. Rachel moved like a wild animal, her nails raking across Marcus's face as he tried to fend her off. He shoved her back, but she came at him again, her hands clawing at his knife. I stayed where I was, watching with morbid fascination as they tore into each other. Part of me thought I should intervene, but another part, the darker part, knew this was exactly what I needed. Let them destroy each other. Let them bleed. Marcus finally managed to wrestle the knife from Rachel's grasp, but she didn't stop. She threw herself at him, her hands wrapping around his throat as she screamed incoherently. He stumbled back, his eyes wide with panic, and for a moment, I thought she might actually kill him. But then he drove the knife into her side. Rachel froze, her hands going slack as the blade sank into her flesh. Her eyes met mine across the room, wide and filled with shock. For a moment, she looked like she might say something, but then her legs gave out, and she crumpled to the floor. Marcus stood over her, his chest heaving, the knife still clutched in his hand. Blood dripped from the blade, pooling on the floor beneath Rachel's lifeless body. The cabin was silent again, the only sound the faint patter of rain against the windows. I stayed where I was, my heart pounding as I stared at Marcus. He looked at me, his eyes filled with something I couldn't quite place, fear, guilt, desperation. "This has to stop," he said, his voice trembling. "It's just you and me now. We can end this." I didn't respond. Instead, I stood slowly, my eyes never leaving his. The chest sat between us, its contents glittering faintly in the dim light. It was the only thing that mattered now. "You're right," I said finally, my voice cold and steady. "It does have to stop." And in that moment, I knew how this would end. Only one of us was walking away from this cabin alive. And it wasn't going to be Marcus. Chapter 7: The Last Betrayal. The cabin was a tomb. The air was cold, stale with the smell of blood and sweat, and death clung to every corner like a shadow that wouldn't lift. Rachel's body still lay where it had fallen, her lifeless eyes staring up at the ceiling as if accusing everyone left breathing. But there were only two of us now, me and Marcus. We both knew what that meant. No more alliances. No more pretense of trust or camaraderie. The time for words had passed. All that was left was the chest and the blood that would seal its fate. Marcus sat on the edge of the couch, the knife still in his hand, his fingers white-knuckled around the handle. His shirt was streaked with Rachel's blood, and there was a look in his eyes that I hadn't seen before. Not anger. Not guilt. Something colder. Something unrelenting. I stood on the other side of the room, leaning against the wall, my arms crossed over my chest. I hadn't spoken since it happened. Words felt unnecessary now. They wouldn't change anything. Marcus knew it, and so did I. "You're quiet," Marcus said finally, his voice rough, like he hadn't spoken in hours. "What's there to say?" I replied evenly. "We both know how this ends." He nodded slowly, his gaze drifting to the chest in the center of the room. "Yeah," he said. "We do." For a moment, neither of us moved. The only sound was the faint creak of the floorboards as the cabin settled around us. The storm outside had died down, leaving an eerie stillness in its wake. It felt like the world itself was holding its breath, waiting for the inevitable. And then Marcus stood. The tension in the room thickened as Marcus took a step forward, the knife glinting in the dim light. I didn't flinch, didn't move. I wanted him to make the first move. I needed him to. "You think you're smarter than me, don't you?" he said, his voice low and venomous. "You've been sitting there, watching, waiting, letting everyone else do the dirty work while you sit back and play innocent." I let out a soft laugh, the sound bitter and humorless. Innocent? Is that what you think I've been doing? Don't play games with me, he snapped, his grip tightening on the knife. I've seen what you're capable of. You think I don't know you've been planning this from the start? Planning what? I asked, pushing off the wall and taking a step closer to him. Surviving? That's all any of us have been doing, Marcus. Surviving? Bullshit, he spat. You've been waiting for this. For all of us to tear each other apart, so you can swoop in and take the prize. And what about you? I shot back, my voice rising. You think you're any better? You killed Rachel, for fuck's sake. Don't pretend like you're some kind of victim here. His eyes narrowed, and I saw the flicker of doubt cross his face. But it was gone as quickly as it came, replaced by a cold determination that sent a shiver down my spine. This ends now, he said, his voice hard. One way or another. He lunged at me, the knife slashing through the air in a quick, deliberate arc. I dodged to the side, the blade grazing my arm but not deep enough to do real damage. The pain was sharp, a hot sting that made my heart race, but I didn't let it slow me down. I grabbed the nearest object, a broken piece of wood from the coffee table, and swung it at him, the force of the blow knocking him off balance. He stumbled back, his grip on the knife faltering, but he didn't let go. You're going to have to do better than that, he growled, charging at me again. This time I was ready. I sidestepped his attack and drove my elbow into his ribs, the impact making him grunt in pain. He swung the knife wildly, the blade catching the edge of my shirt and tearing through the fabric. I could feel the heat of his breath, the raw intensity of his rage, and it fueled my own. I managed to knock the knife from his hand, sending it skittering across the floor. For a moment we both froze, our eyes locked as we realized what had just happened. And then we lunged for it at the same time. The struggle was brutal. We grappled on the floor, our hands clawing at each other as we fought for control of the knife. His strength was overwhelming, his weight pinning me down as he pressed his forearm against my throat. I gasped for air, my vision blurring, but I refused to let go. My fingers brushed the handle of the knife, and I tightened my grip, pulling it toward me with every ounce of strength I had left. I twisted my body, using his momentum against him, and managed to roll us over. Now it was him beneath me, his eyes wide with shock as I straddled his chest, the knife in my hand. You don't have to do this, he gasped, his voice desperate. Yes, I said, my voice steady and cold. I do. And then I drove the knife into his chest. The sound he made was guttural, a mix of pain and disbelief as the blade sank into his flesh. His hands clawed at me, trying to push me off, but his strength was fading fast. Blood bubbled from his lips as he tried to speak, but no words came out. I pulled the knife out and stabbed him again, and again and again, until his body went limp beneath me. My hands were slick with blood, my breaths coming in short, ragged gasps as I stared down at him, at the life that had drained from his eyes. It was over. I sat there for a long time, the knife still in my hand, my mind numb. The chest was mine now. But as I looked around the room, at the bloodstains on the floor, at Rachel's lifeless body, at the destruction we had wrought, I felt no joy, no relief. The treasure hadn't just destroyed my friends. It had destroyed me too. Eventually, I stood, wiping the blood from my hands as best I could. The chest gleamed in the dim light, its promise of fortune and freedom mocking me. I opened it, letting my fingers trail over the gold coins, the jewels, the stacks of old bills. And then I closed it. I carried it out of the cabin, into the woods where it had first been found. The storm had returned, the rain soaking through my clothes as I dug a shallow grave and buried the chest. It wasn't mine to keep. Not anymore. When I walked away from the woods, I didn't look back. There was nothing left for me there, only ghosts, blood, and the echo of what we had once been. We had found a treasure, yes. But in the end, it had cost us everything. Chapter 8, The Breaking Point. The woods swallowed me whole. Rain dripped from the branches above, soaking me to the bone as I stumbled back toward the cabin. Each step felt heavier than the last, the weight of what I'd done pressing down on me like an invisible hand. Marcus was dead. Rachel was dead. Corey was dead. Ella was dead. For people I'd once called my friends, gone in a matter of days, their blood staining my hands. I wanted to tell myself it wasn't my fault, that the chest had been the catalyst, the poison that had seeped into our veins and turned us into monsters. But that would have been a lie. The chest didn't kill them. I did. Or at least, I had been a part of it, as complicit as the rain in the flood. When I reached the cabin, the first thing I noticed was the smell. It was worse now, thick and metallic, a reminder of the lives that had been snuffed out within these walls. I hesitated at the door, my hand hovering over the handle. For the first time, I wondered if going back inside was a mistake. Maybe I should just leave, walk away from the wreckage and never look back. But then I thought of the chest buried deep in the woods and I knew I couldn't leave. Not yet. Not until I was sure it was truly over. Inside, the cabin was a tomb. The air was still, heavy with the stench of death and decay. The bodies were where I'd left them, their lifeless forms sprawled across the floor like broken dolls. Rachel's blood had dried in dark streaks on the floorboards, and Marcus's eyes stared up at the ceiling, empty and glassy. I stepped over Corey's body, careful not to look at his face. He'd been the first to go, the first crack in the foundation that had brought everything crashing down. I didn't want to remember him like this, but I couldn't help it. His blood was on my hands, just like the others. I made my way to the living room and collapsed onto the couch, my head falling into my hands. The silence was deafening, broken only by the faint creak of the floorboards as the cabin settled around me. I closed my eyes, trying to block out the images that played in my mind. Marcus's final breath, Rachel's screams, Ella's lifeless body. But the memories wouldn't leave me. They clung to me like shadows, whispering in my ear, reminding me of everything I'd done. I couldn't escape them, no matter how hard I tried. The first crack in the silence came that evening. I'd spent the day cleaning, scrubbing the blood from the floorboards, moving the bodies to the shed out back. It was a gruesome task, but it had to be done. I couldn't leave them there, couldn't let their deaths haunt me any more than they already did. By the time the sun began to set, the cabin was clean, or as clean as it could be. The smell of bleach lingered in the air, masking the stench of death, but doing little to erase the memories. I sat by the fire, nursing a bottle of whiskey I'd found in the kitchen, trying to drown the voices in my head. That's when I heard it. A faint sound, barely audible over the crackle of the fire. At first, I thought I was imagining it, that the guilt and paranoia had finally driven me mad. But then it came again, a soft creak, like someone stepping on a loose floorboard. I froze, my heart pounding in my chest. The cabin was supposed to be empty. Everyone else was dead. So who or what was making that noise? Who's there? I called, my voice shaking. No answer. I stood slowly, the bottle of whiskey still clutched in my hand like a weapon. My eyes scanned the room, searching for any sign of movement, any shadow that didn't belong. But everything was still, the only sound the crackle of the fire and the blood rushing in my ears. And then I saw it. A figure stood in the doorway, barely visible in the dim light. At first, I thought it was Rachel, her pale face and wild eyes haunting me even in death. But as the figure stepped closer, I realized it wasn't her. It wasn't any of them. It was a stranger. He was tall and thin, his face obscured by the hood of his jacket. He didn't say anything as he stepped into the room, his boots leaving muddy prints on the floor I'd just cleaned. I tightened my grip on the whiskey bottle, my mind racing. "Who the hell are you?" I demanded. He didn't answer. Instead, he tilted his head, as if studying me, his dark eyes glinting in the firelight. There was something unnerving about the way he looked at me, like he could see right through me, like he knew every dark secret I'd been trying to bury. "I asked you a question," I said, my voice rising. "What are you doing here?" Still, he said nothing. He just smiled, a slow, crooked smile that sent a chill down my spine. And then he spoke, his voice low and gravelly. "You buried it, didn't you?" The question caught me off guard, and for a moment, I didn't know how to respond. "What are you talking about?" I finally managed to say. "The chest," he said, taking another step closer. "I know you found it, and I know you buried it." I took a step back, the bottle of whiskey trembling in my hand. "I don't know what you're talking about." "Don't lie to me," he said, his voice sharp. "I've been watching you, watching all of you. I know what you did." The room spun around me, my mind struggling to process his words. How long had he been watching? How much did he know? And more importantly, what did he want? "Leave," I said, my voice trembling. "Get the fuck out of here." He didn't move. Instead, he reached into his jacket and pulled out a gun, the cold steel glinting in the firelight. My breath caught in my throat, and I felt the blood drain from my face. "You're going to take me to it," he said, his tone leaving no room for argument. "Right now." I led him into the woods, the gun pressed against my back, my heart pounding with every step. The rain had started again, the drops cold against my skin as we trudged through the mud and undergrowth. I could barely see the path in front of me, but he didn't seem to care. He was focused, determined, his grip on the gun unrelenting. When we reached the spot where I'd buried the chest, I stopped, my breath coming in short, ragged gasps. "It's here," I said, my voice barely audible. "This is where I buried it." He didn't say anything. He just nodded, gesturing for me to dig. I dropped to my knees, my hands clawing at the wet earth, the mud caking my fingers as I worked. The rain made it difficult, the soil heavy and unyielding, but I didn't stop. I couldn't. Not with the gun trained on me, not with the stranger watching my every move. After what felt like an eternity, my fingers hit something solid. The chest. Open it, he said, his voice low and steady. I hesitated, my hands trembling as I fumbled with the lock. The key was still in my pocket, the weight of it a constant reminder of everything I'd done. I pulled it out, my fingers slick with mud, and slid it into the lock. The chest creaked open, revealing its glittering contents. Gold coins, jewels, stacks of old bills. The stranger let out a low whistle, his eyes gleaming with greed. Beautiful, isn't it? He said, his voice almost reverent. I didn't respond. I couldn't. My mind was racing, searching for a way out, a way to turn the tables. But before I could come up with a plan, he spoke again. You've been through a lot for this, haven't you? He said, his tone almost sympathetic. But don't worry. It's over now. And then he raised the gun. The shot rang out, echoing through the forest. For a moment, I thought he'd killed me. But then I realized the pain wasn't mine. He staggered back, his hand clutching his chest, blood spreading across his shirt like a dark bloom. Behind him stood Marcus. Bloodied, battered, but alive. And in his hand, a gun of his own. I told you, Marcus said, his voice cold. This ends now. As the stranger fell to the ground, his eyes wide with shock, I let out a breath I hadn't realized I'd been holding. But my relief was short-lived. Marcus turned to me, his expression unreadable, the gun still in his hand. It's just us now, he said. And in that moment, I knew the nightmare was far from over. Chapter 9, Ashes to Ashes. Marcus's words hung in the air, heavy and oppressive, sinking into my bones like a weight I couldn't shake. It's just us now. He stood there, rain dripping from his bloodied face, the gun still raised. The forest around us seemed to hold its breath, the storm muted in the shadow of the moment. I didn't respond right away. I couldn't. My mind was racing, torn between fear and rage, survival and surrender. The chest sat between us like a cursed relic, its contents glinting faintly in the dim light filtering through the rain-soaked trees. All the bloodshed, the lies, the betrayals, it all led here. To this moment. And yet, the weight of it didn't feel like triumph or relief. It felt like despair. Marcus's grip on the gun tightened, his knuckles white. He took a step closer, his eyes locked on mine, unyielding. What now? I asked finally, my voice hoarse from the strain of the last few days. You gonna kill me too? That depends, he said, his tone calm but ice cold. Are you going to make me? I let out a bitter laugh, shaking my head. After everything we've been through, you really think I'm just going to hand it over? You're not walking out of here with that chest, Marcus. Neither of us are. His jaw tightened, and for a moment, I thought I saw a flicker of regret in his eyes. But it was gone as quickly as it came, replaced by the same steely determination that had driven him this far. I didn't come this far to walk away empty-handed, he said. And I sure as hell didn't survive just to let you take it. I took a step back, my hands raised slightly, not in surrender but in a calculated move to appear less threatening. You really think this is worth it? Look around, Marcus. Look at what's left. It's just you and me. Everyone else is dead. Do you even remember why we wanted this in the first place? His lips curled into a humorless smile. You think I care about that now? It's not about the money anymore. It's about winning. Winning? I scoffed, anger flaring in my chest. You think this is a game? People are dead, Marcus. Our friends are dead. And for what? A chest full of gold that none of us even knew existed a week ago? Is this really how you want it to end? I don't want it to end, he said, his voice low and fierce. But you've left me no choice. He raised the gun higher, leveling it at my chest. My heart pounded in my ears, but I refused to show fear. Instead, I took another step back, my mind racing. I needed a plan, a way to outmaneuver him, to turn the tables before it was too late. The rain intensified, the downpour soaking us both, plastering my hair to my forehead and turning the ground beneath our feet into mud. The chest sat between us, its lock still broken, its contents exposed. I glanced at it briefly, an idea forming in the back of my mind. You're right, I said, forcing my voice to steady. This does need to end. And then I lunged. Marcus reacted instantly, the gun firing with a deafening crack that echoed through the forest. I felt the heat of the bullet as it grazed my shoulder, a searing pain that made me grit my teeth. But I didn't stop. I tackled him to the ground, the gun slipping from his grip as we fell into the mud. We struggled, our hands clawing at each other, mud and blood mixing as we fought for dominance. He was stronger, his rage giving him an edge, but I was faster, more desperate. I managed to land a punch squarely across his jaw, the impact making him grunt in pain. "You don't have to do this," I shouted, pinning him down. "Let it go, Marcus. Let it go before it destroys us both." "Fuck you," he spat, his hands grabbing at my wrists, trying to break my hold. "You're just like the rest of them. You don't care about anything but yourself." His words stung, but I didn't let them distract me. I grabbed the gun, the cold steel slick with mud, and held it against his chest. He froze, his eyes wide with fear and fury. "You don't have to die," I said, my voice trembling. "Walk away, Marcus. Just walk away." For a moment, I thought he might listen. His chest heaved, his eyes darting between me and the gun. But then his expression hardened, and I knew there was no going back. "You don't have the guts," he sneered. I closed my eyes, my finger tightening on the trigger. "You're wrong." The shot rang out, louder than anything I'd ever heard, and Marcus's body went limp beneath me. I sat there for what felt like hours, the gun still in my hand, the rain washing away the blood and mud that coated my skin. Marcus's lifeless eyes stared up at me, and for the first time since this nightmare began, I felt truly alone. The chest sat a few feet away, its contents gleaming in the dim light. I should have felt victorious, relieved even. But all I felt was hollow. Empty. I crawled to the chest, my hands trembling as I reached for the gold. The coins were cold and heavy, their weight a cruel reminder of everything I'd lost. I thought about Rachel's laughter, Corey's smug grin, Ella's quiet kindness. All of it was gone now, consumed by greed and betrayal. I screamed, a raw, guttural sound that tore through the stillness of the forest. And then I did the only thing I could think of. I grabbed the chest and dragged it to the edge of the cliff. The rain made the ground slippery, the weight of the chest pulling at my arms, but I didn't stop. When I reached the edge, I looked down at the raging river below, its dark waters churning and frothing like a beast waiting to devour its next meal. Without hesitation, I shoved the chest over the edge. The splash was swallowed by the roar of the river, the chest sinking beneath the surface and vanishing from sight. For a moment, I stood there, staring at the water, the rain pounding against my back. And then I turned and walked away, leaving the forest and everything in it behind. I don't know how far I walked or how much time passed before I finally emerged from the woods. The world beyond the trees felt foreign, distant, like a place I no longer belonged to. I was a ghost, a shell of the person I used to be, haunted by the memories of what I'd done. In the end, the chest didn't just destroy my friends. It destroyed me too. But at least now it was gone. Buried in the depths where it could never hurt anyone again. Or so I hoped.